Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Outkick 360's Jonathan Hutton joins us now. Hut, it's good to see you made it back from Phoenix in one piece. Appreciate you for joining us.
Barely.
Barely.
Thank you for recognizing we made it back.
Yeah. Good.
It was fun.
Happy to have you back. Happy you had a good time. Now,
and let's listen to this, Hut. I did not take for granted that you would come back in one piece because I remember a Super Bowl in yesteryear where a young Jonathan Hutton, along with a young Chad Withrow, they had some issues out there with health. Is that true? Isn't that right, Mom?
Yeah,
remember that
somehow,
right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Chad was reminiscing on this. I somehow did not get sick, and there was a stomach bug going around. Chad absolutely did have it, and it ended up just being me on Radio Row, and I just had to stay away from Chad. It was rough, and I felt for him. I remember the flight back. He was laid out on the Southwest flight, all three seats, where he just didn't move. And again,
I felt
for whoever was around him on that flight. It was rough.
Was down for the count. And so you were the last man standing. I'll tell you, it was like, let's go to Jonathan Hutton on Radio Row. He's the only guy we got out there. Everybody else is gone.
Everyone was dropping. Yeah. And I was certain I was going to get it, but somehow, knock on wood, I didn't get the bug then or this past trip either where there was something going around too.
Let's keep that streak going. Vegas, yes. 2024.
Yeah, it's like Jerry Seinfeld. Seinfeld, he had the streak. Remember he got sick? That was his famous Seinfeld episode. He's feeling sick. Then somebody goes, the streak is in jeopardy.
No, you got to hold on to the streak.
Most days in a row, most years in a row without throwing up. That's a bad feeling when the streak comes to an end.
Well, Hutton, we haven't been able to talk to you since the Titans made some offensive coaching moves. Tim Kelly promoted to offensive coordinator. Two-parter for you. One, what do you make of the hire? And two, how do you interpret the timing of the announcement? You know, I thought that if they were going to wait that long, then maybe Bieniemy was in play. Maybe Nagy was in play. They were waiting until after the Super Bowl, but made the announcement. Super Bowl week, what do you make of the hire and the timing?
The timing of it was interesting, Caroline, because of the Super Bowl week, at least from my end, things got buried. I know it was a headline here for sure. Read it two different ways. Number one, they got turned down by someone they wanted, or they were putting that staff together that they ended up announcing with Alton, with Charles London, and then maneuvering the rest of the staff around properly in order to put Tim Kelly's group together that he wanted. Look, I've talked to a couple of people that were in meetings down in Mobile that tell me meetings with the Titans that told me that Tim Kelly wasn't even in the room with them. So prominent players at that. So I found that interesting. I do think they did their due diligence on trying to find the right fit. And I think Vrabel wants to keep the key ingredients to the offensive description together, meaning, you know, the tough physical run. He always mentions running the football, playing strong defense. And I think they looked at their options, and Tim Kelly's someone that they had chatted with or wanted to prior to even hiring Todd Downing. I think they certainly had him at the top of their list to begin with. And, you know, they brought him in as a passing game coordinator, didn't make the switch during the season. And to me, that's the biggest question mark for me is if he's your offensive coordinator, why didn't you go to this sooner if there was such an issue with Downing?
Yeah, that's what we're all trying to figure out. You know, was this more so of a, you know, last, you know, he was sort of the last man standing in a sense, because you look at it now, the two guys that they talked about hiring or talked about, you know, that would be in his hiring process was Nagy and Bieniemy. And it seems like both of those guys right now are staying put. So if you want to keep some continuity, then you keep Tim Kelly. But my thing is, Hutt, how much does this, because, you know, you were looking for change within the offense. You were looking to be more explosive. And I know that comes with players as well. But how much of a change are we going to see in this offense, you know, with Tim Kelly? Because it seems like, you know, he's not going to do anything too far different than what we've seen. Now, the play calling in-game might be different, but as far as the plays, it just seems like everything's going to be the same.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they can improve even though things may look very similar. You know, in-game play calling. They were the exact opposite this past season compared to 2021 on how they started games. They were very good at starting games offensively, and it was the reverse the year prior where they were good at finishing games, not starting games, always starting slow. And, you know, I still don't know what flipped, what changed, because Downing was still the play caller then. The insert was Tim Kelly, but, you know, that could be more of the game plan going in, the script, than it was the in-game play calling that Downing was in charge of. Again, don't know. They haven't said that. But I think it's fair to at least throw that out there that Kelly had a big part in the way they started games. The other thing, like, when it's not that Downing wasn't creative. It's the creativity and when he tried to call those plays. Mm-hmm. You know, the game against the Indianapolis Colts comes to mind for me, where they're driving down the field. Henry's leading the charge on this particular possession, and then for whatever reason, they insert Malik Willis on an end around and they fumble. So things like that, the reverse pass that we saw from Treylon Burks down in a must-win game at Jacksonville. Weird. Like, why do you call that in that situation where you just need to go get points and win the game? All of that together is why I had an issue with the quote unquote creativity with Downing, because it just didn't fit the flow and rhythm of the game. And I felt oftentimes defenses weren't having to chase the call. Mm-hmm. They weren't having to predict what's coming, and the coordinator's already two play calls ahead. I just don't think that's been there since Arthur Smith left. And I don't have an issue if Vrabel points to Tim Kelly as being the answer to what's going to get them back to who they were, because they didn't have an offensive identity, even they've won a point to a run game last year. And if he wants to point to Tim Kelly as an in-house guy who's going to do that, I mean, he did that from LaFleur. Then he made the change. He has Arthur Smith. We know how good that offense was. They go from within with Todd Downing. That doesn't work to the point where 2 years later we're on to Tim Kelly, but Kelly was who they asked to interview the previous go around anyway from Houston. So they would have, I think they would have asked for permission to interview Tim Kelly, whether he was or was not a part of this coaching staff, because he tried to do that last time.
Yeah, I look at it the same way in regards to, you know, I'm not, it to me, am I overly surprised? No. Do I think it's a bad hire? No. I guess we'll just see how it pans out once the season starts.
Yeah, and it, you know, the other thing too is we mentioned Bieniemy earlier. Bieniemy is interviewing for the job in Washington, the offensive coordinator position with the Commanders. So it's not like he's just going to do status quo after winning the Super Bowl again with Andy Reid. It sounds like he wants the keys to the offense. He wants to run the show. He certainly could have done that here. Mm-hmm. So, and when we know the Titans, according to reports, the Titans reached out for permission to talk with him. So I don't know where that lapse came from, unless Vrabel just saw they interviewed Charles London for the OC job. Mm-hmm. They interviewed Alton for the OC job, and they still end up with both those guys on their staff. And, you know, they have Tim Kelly running the show.
Now, what do you make of the whole Ryan Tannehill possibly being out and someone else? And I, you know, based on what I've seen or what I haven't heard in regards to the Titans saying, hey, listen, this is our quarterback going into the 2023 season. I think that's why his name is still being thrown into rumors, whether he's going to be this quarterback or not. How do you see it?
I view it as Tannehill's the QB. I understand there are a lot of connections being made with the Jets because of the connections from the coaching staff here, now there. So this is the time of year we try to link everything up. And I get why you make the connections like that. The same way I've seen some people put out there that Derek Carr is going to Houston, you know, and McClain is adamant that's not happening. But you still make the connection because his brother played there and, you know, anything else that's going on. I think you can have Tannehill back this year and still plan for the future. And if you look at the situation, guys, it's I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs were in this situation. Andy Reid was in this situation in 2017. After the 2016 season, they were 12-4 with Alex Smith, but going nowhere. And they drafted Patrick Mahomes. And they played Alex Smith for a year, but they drafted Patrick Mahomes. They traded up to get him. They invested in quarterback. And you can do that this year and still have Ryan Tannehill as a part of your roster. I think both things can be true, where they draft someone for the future, but actually have Tannehill under contract for at least another year. And a restructuring will have to take place, of course, because of the cap hit that they can save by not having him there. All that being said, I think all options are on the table. I'm not saying that he's for sure the quarterback in 2023. I just think it makes the most sense based on where they are right now and what they would have to spend to either trade to get someone or sign someone off the street, the best one being Carr. And I mean, is that really an upgrade? I mean, it's a fresh start, and we saw what a fresh start meant for Tannehill, so maybe, but you really don't know that. And regardless, they've got to start planning for the future. And I look at a lot of the options as solutions for the here and now. Vrabel's all about that. But the new GM, Rand Carthon, he's got to be building this roster forward and look beyond just the 2023 season.
In my opinion, Derek Carr isn't just not an upgrade. I think it would be a step back. Lateral move at absolute best. But we'll continue the conversation with Jonathan Hutton coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app, Outkick 360's Jonathan Hutton is with us. Hutton, while we're on the topic of the quarterback carousel, and we know Aaron Rodgers is about to go into his darkness cave, holistic, whatever, you know, hypnosis he's going through, Aaron Rodgers could potentially be on the quarterback carousel. Aaron Rodgers has also been in you know, relationships with the Titans in the past. Would you rather have Ryan Tannehill and the picks and the money, or would you give the picks, give the money for Aaron Rodgers and hopefully have him for a year or two and you're really going for it?
Well, I need to know. I don't do it just based on that circumstance. I need to know who he's bringing with him, wide receiver-wise. And I also need some type of assurance that he's playing beyond next season, because that's a steep price to pay for one season where it doesn't look like they're in a, you know, one piece away like that to compete for a title. So that's of the utmost importance. And you also, I mean, they've also got to have some room for offensive line and other things too. And I mean, without some picks, they're not going to be able to address every issue they had up front last year. All that being said, it is a considerable upgrade. And it's something that they absolutely should pick up the phone and call about. I mean, it fits the criteria for, you know, what the Packers reportedly want to do, which would be trade him within the AFC. And Rodgers, who knows? You know, he's building here. He's got a home here, whatever. Yeah, and we know that he and Vrabel respect each other. So I don't just say it's out of the world. No way. It's not happening. It's a crazy idea. But there need to be some caveats to it, some assurances that this isn't going to be an ongoing saga year after year, where you wonder if the guy's coming back and what he's playing for. That needs to be determined before you make that trade.
Jonathan Hutton is with us from Outkick. And Hutt, we were looking at the early mock drafts. And regardless of what you think of mock drafts or anything, I just start wrapping my arms around how many holes they have right now for the Titans. And I feel like that's more reason to believe. It's just so much smarter and practical to stay with Tannehill, who's under contract, rather than shuffle everything around, give up assets, take on way more money for the position to grab a new quarterback. It just doesn't make sense to me. I will continue like you to think Tannehill. But if you were to look at the top of the draft, I don't know how much you've looked at it yet.
A little.
But tell me what you're thinking for the first pick, provided that they stay practical, don't do anything radical, and pick at 11.
So I think practical offensive tackle, and the other question they've got to answer, and I don't think they can answer this yet. Mace, you can absolutely chime in on this too. They've got to find, they need to find out if Treylon Burks wants to be great. Because last offseason was not great for Treylon Burks. And so they need to keep a close eye on that. Is he a number one wide receiver is what I'm getting at. Is he the alpha? He looked like it in the SEC. If he's not, if you're hesitant on that, you've got to, I mean, at 11, they've got a great shot at getting a premier wide out there. So that's the other way I would lean, determining factor being where is Burks and the answer there. If he's your number one and you invested 16, but you traded away AJ, whatever you want to say, that just can't be the answer. You building forward, you've got to be able to say he's the guy. We're going to build around him. There's speed in this draft throughout at wide receiver. They're going to add that for sure. The practical answer would be offensive tackle because of what they've lost in previous drafts and what they desperately need now to protect both the quarterback and get the run game going again. But also the talent at the top at wide receiver, Willie, maybe too good to pass up at wide out if you're not certain that Burks is the number one guy like they were last year. But last year he was also, what, the fourth or fifth wide out taken through 16 picks. I mean, it was a run on them. And up top this year, there's plenty of solid talent there too. I go offensive tackle or wide receiver based on the needs.
Here's a retrospect question for you that we were kicking around in the first hour. Derek was looking at some of John Robinson's drafts. And one of the themes that we hit on early, remember he had the first pick. He inherited the job. He has the first overall pick. And he says, all right, I'm wheeling and dealing. He made the big deal with the Rams. So among his first round picks were Jack Conklin, Corey Davis, who we got the next year, and Adoree Jackson. So those are three guys, and there's other examples too, but they all had the same thing in common. They were pretty good players, but players that he chose not to sign for the second contract. There's other guys we can add to that list. Sure. But in retrospect, do you think they should have just hung on and had a little more continuity with guys like that, a little more leap of faith?
With Corey Davis, yes. Jonnu Smith, you know, I realize you're going top of the draft. I'm thinking of guys.
But no, Jonnu Smith is another really good example that was right alongside Corey Davis, where they kind of said it weeks ahead of time that those guys are going to hit the market. They put it down. They told the audience, basically, we're not bringing those guys back. And so that's a really interesting what-if question, because one of the reasons they did it, because they took those resources and went after Julio Jones with it. We know how that turned out.
And they also, I mean, Jonnu Smith got paid heavily in New England. I don't think they could keep both guys, right? Like I think that's part of the equation is if you're keeping one or the other. And then what they chose to do by signing some other players outside of those offensive weapons and thinking that who they had was going to be enough, and it certainly wasn't. And also in retrospect makes you look back and think that 2020 season was the year to cash in with the talent they had offensively and how they were rolling. And I think maybe there's one or two guys that Corey Davis is, when healthy, a serviceable number two wideout. And they had a number one in AJ. But again, like the philosophy and mentality of this team has been the identity is not on the outside. It's in the backfield. And so they chose to pay Derrick Henry instead of pay, you know, Corey Davis or Jonnu Smith or whoever. I mean, that's ultimately what they decided to do, and then allocate other money on the defensive side to guys like Kevin Byard and others. So that was kind of their line of thinking. In retrospect, I mean, it did help get them to the postseason, but you have to win different ways in the postseason. When it came time to actually throw the football, they couldn't against the Bengals or this past season. They couldn't do it whenever they had to do it based on offensive line issues and wide receiver problems. So, yeah, I mean, but look, I still think they still have to build from the inside out right now. O-line is in desperate need of an overhaul, and then they've got to determine what they're going to do at wide out, plus – who they're going to lose on defense based on contract, which would be pass rush and linebacker, and what they're going to do at those spots and how early.
last thing for me, this is again to illustrate how complex or what are the real issues here with the quarterback carousel and not just, hey, would so-and-so fit with so-and-so? So right. David Carr has now the exclusive window as a free agent before free agency actually starts and well before we have any idea what Aaron Rodgers is going on and will we ever know exactly what's going on in Aaron Rodgers' head. But it's going to take some time, right? But so do you feel like, as I do, that Derek Carr should probably go all in right now, try to leverage that and say, you can have your quarterback problem solved right now. I'm here for you. Give me a good deal. I think that will be done well before we know what's going on with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I do too. He's able to sign. He gets a month head start on the new league year. That's extremely beneficial for him. And he's going to have plenty of suitors. I mean, all but probably Atlanta and the NFC South, plus the Jets and others. The Titans are linked there. But again, you certainly want to talk to him. But if you think about the money and how he's going to have plenty of offers for upgrades based on where those teams are, and he's already met with the Saints, he can do that again, and they don't have to trade for him now. That's advantage Carr to go ahead and get that done. And Willie, what do we do if Aaron Rodgers in this darkness retreat, if he sees a vision of the Chicago Bears or San Francisco 49ers? I'm guaranteeing you he's not going to see the Bears or the Niners as teams that he believes he should play for.
No, yeah, yeah.
We also were trying to figure out what is the surrounding area for Rodgers while he's in this retreat. Is it a hut? Is it a tent? Is it a cave? Like, you want to be comfortable, right? So what do we think? Yeah. Is it made
Does
of straw?
Does he want to be comfortable?
Maybe he wants to be uncomfortable.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like a very comfortable experience all the way around.
I would need an Ambien is what I would need if I'm going to do this. I've heard of these float tanks. You know, I've seen these float tanks that I believe the Titans have one, if I'm not mistaken, where all of your senses are narrowed down to where you're in your mind, right? And I think this is a version of this, but in Rodgers' own way of doing it, which he booked like four or five months ago, I believe. More power to him. It can last up to 4 days. You can tap out whenever you want to, apparently. I'm also curious, like, is there a reporter back in the day, Jim Wyatt would absolutely be in that darkness retreat, whatever it is, reporting on whatever quarterback he was covering, determining every possible outcome and how everything went from his own vantage point. Is there a reporter that's trying to book their own way into this? Or, again, I don't know how many people are in there or if it's a single only.
I can
have
see.
No clue.
I can. If it's a hut, I can see the headline: "Hutton in the Hut" with Aaron Rodgers.
Is that your bid to go with Aaron Rodgers on his darkness retreat?
Oh, I would do it. Yeah, I don't know if I could last as long as he could on the 4 day retreat, but I mean, I would do it as long as I could hold out. Yeah,
I think that would absolutely be an experience. I don't know if it'd be a good one, but an experience nonetheless.
What do you do in the darkness? Like, you're supposed to not be able to see anything, right? Pitch mm-hmm. black. What do you do if you have to go to the restroom?
Hope for the best.
There might be night lights or something, I don't know, to guide you to the bathroom.
I think he's taking a holistic approach to it where, yeah, you know, if I go, I go.
Hey, you could take that approach too.
You're right about that.
And if there's enough people doing that, that's when I tap out. I'm not lasting 4 days.
And with that, I'm out. Jonathan Hutton, now Kick 360. Appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
Thank you, guys. Always enjoy it. Have a great day.
Yep. All right. Appreciate you, Hutton. So we got one team that is heating up, one team that is cooling down. Could that change anytime soon? We'll explain. Coming up next, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
East is inbounding. No timeouts. You got Golston. Couple of dribbles.
He's got to shoot.
2 seconds. Let's it go. Into the win. If it counts, and it looked like he got it off.
It looked like it counted.
Oh,
he got it.
Man.
There was nobody else to pass the ball to. There was nobody. You know, I mean.
Oh, poor Vols. Two back-to-back losses at the hands of a buzzer beater. I don't know if ever in the history of basketball, ever at any level, has a team lost two games in a row after a buzzer beater. Of course, lose to Vanderbilt this past week off of a buzzer beater three. Lose to Missouri in the very, very, very last second on a buzzer beater shot. Poor Vols. They've now lost three of their last four, and the one game that they won against Auburn was a really abysmal offensive performance. So Tennessee's got a really tough test at home tonight. The number one team in the country, Alabama, coming to town. It's going to be a really tough fought game. But I know right now Tennessee fans are feeling down about this team, which is a complete 180 after Tennessee's start, where they looked so good. Every game was so dominant. They really blew Texas out. And then ever since that game, Tennessee's been struggling a lot. But you host the number one team in the country in Alabama at home tonight. The perception of this team and where it is right now can take another 180, and it can start to feel a lot better about this team. If you beat Alabama tonight, going to be tough.
Yeah, if you fast forward to March, what happens between now and when they take the court here in Nashville at the SEC tournament, those two buzzer beaters could be way, way in the rear view. They won't have to define your season. And I agree with you. I was thinking about this, and let's define buzzer beater. We're talking about a true buzzer beater where you don't get the ball back. There was a game in Arizona here recently, University of Northern Arizona, two teams playing. I think Portland State was the other
one. Let's go Lumberjacks.
So the Lumberjacks hit one that looked like a buzzer beater. Everybody's going crazy. They're running on the court. The home team is celebrating. Wait a second. There's still 0.4 left. There's still 0.4. And Portland State throws one, catches and tips it in. So there were two buzzer beaters in one. So the true buzzer beater is Tennessee with Vanderbilt and Missouri hitting shots where the ball is through the rim with zero. Like, you don't get anything. That's the true buzzer beater. I wonder how many times that's happened to a team in consecutive games. Like, that's a tough feeling.
That is bad luck.
That is a tough feeling. So, and if you look at the Missouri one, there was a lane violation right before.
Again, it was Vescovy.
78%
two games in a row.
Yeah, 78% free throw shooter. He's the guy you want at the free throw line. He missed both. And the second one, it actually would have been better if he missed, because they waved it off because of a lane violation that allowed Missouri to take the ball inbounds. Missouri had no timeouts. They didn't draw up a play at all. They just said, "Here, take it,
lob it up."
Well, they didn't even lob it up. He just dribbled down and threw up a prayer from 35 feet out. I've seen now teams that really are organized, they'll throw the ball to half court. Remember the Christian Laettner play where, you know, they threw the ball the length of the court? You know, that's a designed play to get closer to the basket.
Yeah.
This guy just dribbled down just past half court and heaved it up. All net. Hey, it worked. So that Tennessee was unlucky. But tonight is a great opportunity, right? You've got number one coming into your barn. Now, here's the issue for Tennessee. They've got a couple of guys hurt.
Josiah Jordan James
has been ruled out. He's not going to play. The other kid, Julian Phillips, is that his last name? The freshman? He is a game-time decision. He's a good player for them. But I still think there's enough on that roster with the way Tennessee defends. And when you play Alabama, they force you to guard the whole width of the court. They're going to put two guys in the corner, NBA style. They're going to drive hard from the top. They're going to have four or five guys on the court at all times who can shoot the three. They're going to get a lot of threes up. So that's going to be the key for Tennessee, is can they defend? And, of course, Alabama has a great player on the court tonight from our backyard, from Cane Ridge High School, Brandon Miller. If you haven't seen this kid play, like, I know there's a lot of fans that kind of start focusing in a little bit more on college basketball now for the stretch run, and then they're going to be all in March. If you haven't watched this kid, this guy is an unbelievable talent. Shoots 43% from three. Can jump out of the gym. He could have some acrobatic plays at the rim. I think he's a lottery pick. He's a one and done.
As a favorite to be the first overall pick in the draft this year.
And I saw some highlights of him at Cane Ridge High School where it was like, wow.
One of the next great ones out of the state of Tennessee. But no, the problem that UT is going to have, I think, moving forward, this is a good team. This is a solid team, but as good as they are on the defensive end, there are two things that I think may be their demise. They don't score enough points, and they are -3 when it comes to turnovers to their opponent. So, to me, even though it doesn't seem like a lot, like three doesn't seem like a lot, that still, you know, three opportunities that you've shown that you give the ball away each game. So it's plus three each game, whoever you play. If they give up six, you're giving up nine. So it's plus three no matter how you call it against each team. And I think ultimately them not being able to score as much and them having the turnover ratio for them is minus three, I think that's going to be ultimately the demise of this team in the tournament in March Madness. I think Alabama is clearly the best team. You could say Texas A&M, yeah, but I think if you've watched Alabama play, they have shooters and they have length. They are a long team. Like, you watch this team play, and it seems like everybody's over 6'10". That's the way they seem. They may not be, but down in the blocks, that's how they play. You know, a bunch of long, physical, athletic guys, and it's hard to score against them. So you're talking about a team that plays great defense in Tennessee, but have a hard time scoring against a team that has length and athleticism across the board. And they got a dominant player in Miller. So it's going to be hard for UT to win this game tonight. Not to say that it can't win it because it's in Knoxville. So that's a plus for them because I don't think they've lost a game this year in Knoxville. If they have, it's been one.
Missouri buzzer beater. Exactly. Yeah.
They've only lost one at home. So, you know, you can say that's in your favor, but then, you know, they get players out, Josiah's out. So I think tonight they have to prove that even if they don't win, they got to prove that they can play with Alabama. They got to keep this. This is where their defense really has to step up. Against this Alabama team, because if they don't step up, it might be a prequel to what we will see, you know, moving forward, not just in the SEC tournament, but once you get in March Madness, where teams are, now you're facing teams that you've never faced before. And these teams may be long, just like Alabama.
Right, and Alabama hasn't just become the team to beat in the SEC. It is the team to beat in the country.
Exactly.
And to your point about Alabama, it's so true. That team is so big. That's where Tennessee really struggles. Mm-hmm. They really struggle to defend the big men. Because Tennessee's team, physically, isn't very big. Look at Vescovi. Look at Zakai Ziegler. They're not very big guys. But it's kind of a slow kill. They'll just beat you down because they'll out-discipline you. But they struggle against the big men. And Alabama's got a whole team full of big men.
Yeah, they can go big, Tennessee. But, you know, it was interesting. They were way behind against Missouri. They went to a small lineup. They were down 17 in the second half. That's what really probably stung even extra for Tennessee, is they went from down 17, sort of dead in the water. The place was not making any noise. Suddenly they got ahead. I want to say their biggest lead was probably six. And to make that kind of swing and then still come up short, that was really frustrating. But one of the things was they went small. So what does Rick Barnes do, especially with a couple of guys maybe not available tonight? These are two of the best five defensive teams in the country. Mm-hmm. So I think when you're playing Alabama, to beat Alabama, you're going to have to hit some big shots that are contested shots. They're just not going to give you wide open shots time in and time out down the court. That's what makes you an elite defensive team. But I like that Tennessee's playing in their own gym. I think this could be a really big emotional kind of game. Alabama is a great team, but I just don't think they're a team that's so great that they're going to run the table in the league. I don't think they're that level. In fact, I think college basketball, if you look around, like Purdue got beat the other day at Northwestern. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's that dominant team come tournament time. That could make it fun, I think, for March Madness.
And it would be a total, you know, Rick Barnes move that just follows this trend that we've seen from Rick Barnes, where you go on a couple clunkers and you don't look very good by the stretch of four or five games, and then you turn around and you beat the top team in the country at your own house. It would not surprise me in the slightest if Tennessee pulls out a win tonight.
Yeah, so Kansas is one of Tennessee's best wins. That's a signature win early in the season. Kansas went through this a couple weeks ago. They lost three in a row. Kansas never loses three in a row. And I want to say maybe four out of six, somewhere in there. It looks like they're playing much better basketball right now. I got a chance to watch them a little bit last night. They look like whatever little swoon they were in, has come around. I think that's what's got to give you hope if you're Tennessee. If you feel like you're good enough to beat Kansas by 14 on a neutral court, you're better than you've played here these last couple weeks. So you got to fight to get out of that slump and hope that this is your little downturn, and then you can kind of accelerate into March.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Hey, moving is no fun, and it can be expensive. So you can save on your next move with our Nashville's best deal of the week from Black Tie Moving. Get $200 off a day, a half-day move, for just $75, or $400 off a full-day move for $150 at thegamenashville.com/deals. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game.
I mean, I think it just credited to sports, man. I just think sports does an unbelievable job of – you know, teaching lessons and, you know, being able to deal with adversity, being able to bounce back from it, you know, having some resiliency, you know, being able to take criticism, being able to take coaching. And, you know, and I think, you know, Tyrant's experienced some of that this week, just from the standpoint of continuing to just give us more, because I think he's capable. I feel like he's one of those guys that we can push for more. Jordan Wright is another one of those guys that we can push for more. Liam is a guy that we can push for more. So, and we squeeze it, we all we can out of all of them. But I just think those guys can, you know, when they're really assertive, and that's what it took to beat a team like Tennessee, man. Just we're not being able, not relaxing during possessions. And we all do it. I mean, I'm pretty sure if I go back and watch a film, I did it a ton too. But we got to get guys out of the, you know, the relaxing mode when I'm not engaged, you know, when I'm not the ball, I'm not involved with the ball. And I think that's the difference in us. If we can find a way to do that the rest of the way, we have a chance to win every game that we play from here on out. And it's just doing it more consistent. Even last night, going back and watch the games, you know, we did, you know, better than we had been doing, but it's still another level for it. And like I said, I think that's the exciting part. We just got to do it.
There you go. That was Vanderbilt head basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse on the program last week talking about what it took to overcome a really, really brutal loss against Alabama and then come back and win four in a row. 60-point loss against Alabama, went on to beat Ole Miss, beat Tennessee, probably their biggest win of the season so far, beat Florida, beat South Carolina. Now they host Auburn this weekend. Vanderbilt absolutely is heating up. Four games in a row, and they're 7-6 in the SEC. I don't want to act like that is, you know, absolutely overachieving and miraculous, but based off of what we saw from Vanderbilt in the middle of the season and being able to turn it around in these past four games, get a big marquee win against Tennessee, and then also another opportunity to get a big marquee win against Auburn the way that they're playing, I think that Vanderbilt is not a team that can be ignored at this point.
Well, it was interesting. We had a great talk with Coach Stackhouse there, and that was a clip from it. That was right after they beat Tennessee. So since then, they've built on that. They've gone to Florida and won on the road against a bubble team in Florida. That's a nice notch. And then last night, a very dominant take care of business kind of game at South Carolina. It's never easy to win.
South Carolina.
You should, and it was a poor atmosphere. But what I liked was they led wire to wire. They didn't struggle. They looked like they were way better than South Carolina. You're looking for marks. Like, you're trying to make an impression here of we're a strong team. We're a team that needs to be moving up. You're trying to get the attention of the committee. They're not there yet. They're not on the radar. You will not hear Joe Lunardi talking about Vanderbilt on the bubble yet. But you just mentioned it. Auburn had a dominant win last night against Missouri. They cleaned Missouri's clock. It was a blowout.
Not a bad team
last
in Missouri.
Night. Missouri just won at Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
So Auburn is coming in as a quad one opportunity in your barn. So what does that lead to? I want to see how the Vanderbilt fans respond. You know, we've talked about the Vanderbilt crowd. It's not what it used to be. There were some people that really were sour a few weeks ago on Jerry Stackhouse. This team deserves to have a home court advantage. You're going to need a home court advantage against Auburn. Auburn is really, really good. So I'm curious to see what the atmosphere looks like on Saturday night. You've got a Saturday night SEC home game like that. You should be able to have a bigger crowd just for that reason rather than a Monday night or a Tuesday or a Wednesday. So this is probably the biggest game, I would say, that Jerry Stackhouse has had since he's been there. Because
really?
Because I think if they win this game, it's another quad one win, I think you can start to see the edge of the bubble. It's gettable. Now, they have to keep playing well. You mentioned 7-6 in the league. it's also not an equal 7-6. They have played the toughest schedule in the SEC, just the way the schedule has fallen. Two with Tennessee. They're going to have to go to Kentucky, so they will play Kentucky a second time. They played Alabama twice. So let's just take Tennessee and Alabama. A lot of teams in the league didn't have to play them twice. They had to play both of them twice. So that's good in your strength of schedule. They're not going to have 23 or 24 wins to get in there. They made it a couple years ago at, I think, 19-14 or something. But they dug themselves a hole early in the non-conference. They're trying to dig out of it. But they're healthy now. They're playing like a team that I think can play with anybody in the league right now.
Poor Vanderbilt played the toughest schedule in college football this past year. They had to play Alabama and Georgia.
Yeah, exactly.
Vanderbilt basketball playing two of the best teams in the country, not just the league, in the country, twice in basketball. Throw them a freaking bone.
Yeah, I mean, they've, you know, if you look at their schedule, Leon Robbins, his last game played before he came back, was against UT. Now, they played UT extremely well in the first half. Actually, they were up in the first half.
At Tennessee, yes.
Yeah, at Tennessee. And then the second half was a totally different story. I think, UT outscored them. I think it was 40-to something, and they, blew that game open. They ended up winning by, 11 points. But after that, Liam Robinson's out. This team looks as if they are headed for a downward spiral. And then he comes back, and they reel off four straight. That tells me that when he's in the game fully healthy, then he gives them more than a okay shot to win games. He's a big fella. He's arguably one of the best big men in college basketball right now. And when he's on the court, when they're healthy, I think this is a team that can push. Because, you know, they're going to have to do a lot from here on out and into the tournament to sort of play their way into the big tournament. But I think as long as they stay healthy, they have a great shot at not just winning a game in the SEC tournament, but getting pretty far. And I think if they can win at least a game or two in the SEC tournament, I think that will put them in a better position. Obviously, how they finish the season, the remainder of their games, but I think that puts them in a better position considering the schedule that they've played. That put them in a better position to then be one of those teams that is right outside the bubble of making a tournament, and it's going to come down to basically three or four teams who's going to make it. And I think Vanderbilt will want to be one of those three or four teams.
Let's take a look at what they've got. They've got Auburn this weekend. Huge game, as we just mentioned. LSU on the road, winnable game.
Oh, they'll win that game.
Well,
LSU is awful, god-awful, horrible. They stink.
Not as bad as South Carolina, but they've struggled, obviously. Florida at home, another toss-up, but another big swing game on the schedule.
Winnable game.
At Rupp, which is never easy, as we know.
But winnable.
Yeah, I mean, Kentucky's not the juggernaut they have been, but they're going to need that win. Kentucky is on the bubble right now. And then Mississippi State, who's kind of snuck in there, they are in the bubble talk right now. So it's a tough schedule, but it's also a schedule where you have a chance to get some notches, get some wins that mean something, right? Wins that are in the quad one range, that's the kind of win. So to go to your SEC tournament reference, D-Mace, it's the goal in the SEC tournament would be, you know, if you won an early game against, let's just say, you know, you beat South Carolina again. That doesn't really do anything for the committee. But you earn yourself an opportunity to play an Arkansas, an Auburn, a Tennessee, an Alabama, somebody that you could get a big win against. That's the kind of thing that could throw you up over the top. But you got to get into position by winning some of these other games first. So they're not there yet. But they're, man, like you said, Robbins is playing so well right now. Ezra Magnon, the point guard, is really coming on. He is tough to stop. So they're putting some things together that make them a tough team to beat right now.
Well, and then if you because Kentucky came up, and that's going to be a tough task for them. But the last time they played Kentucky, they didn't have Robbins.
Correct.
So
and that's another thing the committee would have to look at.
You know, they are a much different team when Liam is on a court than when he's not.
No question.
And like you said, that's the things that the committee has to look at. How did they fare when he was on the court? And how did they fare when he was off the court?
One and three in the league without Robbins. And then the first game back was the Alabama nightmare where he played, but then he conked heads with Jordan Wright, and they both went out. They had to get stitches, and the game just, as we know, 101-44. Did you need to know anything else about that game?
It was rough. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We all already knew Aaron Rodgers was off his rocker, but he strikes again. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 106.3 The Game.